In late September, Oregon's Legislative Emergency Board will vote on the Department of Corrections request for nearly $10 million to open a second prison for women. I'm here with Shannon White, Deputy Director from Partnership for Safety and Justice. Shannon, Oregon has one woman's prison, Coffee Creek Correctional Facility in Wilsonville. Why is the Department of Corrections seeking $10 million for a second woman's prison?
Right now, the only prison for women in Oregon, Coffee Creek Correctional Facility, is at about 1,300 prisoners, and their maximum capacity is 1,280. So they're about 20 people over capacity, which is a problem to run a facility safely and well. They end up double bunking people, filling what should be recreational space with people instead of activities. And this isn't safe or productive for the women there or for the staff who work there.
Is building a new prison the only way to address overcrowding?
No, and I should clarify that they're not saying they want to build a new prison. They want to open a minimum security prison at the Oregon State Prison Grounds that was closed back in 2010. And they are proposing that they open that and fill it with women overflowing from the Coffee Creek facility. Still, though, that's not the right answer. We're basically talking about spending $10 million for 20 women, which I think would be misspent resources for our state. We know that about 70% of the women who came into prison in 2015 came in for drug and property crimes, which arguably could be diverted into our community where women could get treatment. And certainly $10 million goes much further in our communities than it does to do brick and mortar beds in a prison.
So the Oregon legislative session will begin in February 2017. Why is the Oregon Legislative Emergency Board meeting in September to vote on funding?
Well, the emergency board is put in place when the legislature doesn't meet so that they can allocate needed funds to the state. So that's a regularly scheduled meeting. The Department of Corrections has identified the problem with being overfilled in their prisons back in May and now again in September. And it will be up to the e-board to decide if they want to fund those prison beds. We would argue that that money would be better spent by diverting women from prison as they're, instead of sending them to prison for these drug and property offenses, to find places where we can hold them accountable and get them the services they need in the community.
Are that many more women being convicted of crimes than in the past?
You know, one of the things that happened is that Measure 57, which we passed in Oregon back in 2009, was suspended for a few years. And now that measure has come back online and it created enhanced and mandatory sentencing for drug and property crimes. That has a huge impact on the female population. And we're seeing that growth now. And it's really pushing the capacity of our only women's prison. And I think it's important to remember when you're thinking about women in prison that they are usually the primary caregivers of their children. So one of the things that we're doing when we choose prison over other forms of accountability and treatment is tearing apart families. We know there aren't great foster care programs here. There aren't wonderful places for these children to end up. And the kinds of resources we could invest if we divert these women from prison, give them the supports they need, I think is the right kind of investment for Oregon, where opening a second prison would be taking us in exactly the wrong direction.
And you said, Shannon, that in 2015, nearly 70% of women sent to prison were convicted of drug or property crimes. So they're not violent offenders.
Absolutely not. And that's, again, why we really are pushing strongly for this not to be the answer. These aren't people that need to be taken off the street for safety reasons. These are women with children, many of whom have histories of abuse, who are struggling with addiction, who really need the kinds of supports and services to be good parents and to be, you know, productive parts of our communities. You know, one thing that's important to remember when you look at what's happening with our female prison population right now is that the growth in the last sort of 7 to 8 years of men and women going to prison is incredibly disproportionate. The male population has been growing by about 2%, while the female population has been growing by 22%. And we don't know exactly why that's happening, but I don't think there's a crime wave of women right now. And we need to look at why we're sending so many people to prison. And this follows a national trend. Some reports have come out recently showing a report by the Vera Institute of Justice, similar numbers, 3% increase for men, 18% for women. So something is happening here, and we need to look more deeply at our female population.
In 2013, Oregon legislators passed House Bill 3194 that flatlined prison growth for 5 years. And I want to say that that was 2013, and here we are in 2016 talking about opening another prison. But the money saved from House Bill 3194, the justice reinvestment dollars saved, were divided among Oregon counties to provide for programs and services in the communities to help people and divert them from prison. Why are we talking about a new prison in 2016?
That's a really good question, and it's worth noting that at the same time that the Department of Corrections is looking to expand to a prison for women, they've also expanded their capacity at an existing prison at Deer Ridge for men. So we are at a critical juncture. The bill, Justice Reinvestment, that we helped support in 2013, like many bills, was a compromise package. It didn't include many of the reforms that we knew needed to be in there, including Measure 57 that I mentioned before, reforms to Measure 11, the ballot measure passed in 1994 that created mandatory minimum sentencing. These are laws that we have on the books that aren't based in the reality of what works best for public safety. So those things were left out of the final deal of the Justice Reinvestment Package, and that's why we are where we are. And we knew and said as soon as that bill passed that it didn't go far enough. And the compromise deal basically kept us right under the prison line for having to open or build a new prison. And it was, you know, what happens with our prison intakes isn't that easy to predict. And so we cut the line too close. We didn't go far enough when we had an opportunity to. And we are going to have to look at going deeper into that conversation in 2017, or we will be opening prisons in the next couple of years.
So talk about this Oregon Emergency Board vote in September.
The importance of the September vote is really a strategic direction for the state. Like, are we a state that's going to continue to invest, like we did with Justice Reinvestment, in communities, or are we going to go back on track to building and opening new prisons? Here's the one thing. Counties have done, by and large, a good job of creating alternatives with the new money that came to them so that they can divert more people from prison. But the bottom line is that in the end, our prosecutors, our elected prosecutors and their staff are the only people really who have the power to divert people from prison. Judges have very little control over that anymore after these ballot measures have been passed. And so we really need to look to our elected prosecutors to examine closely who they are sending to prison, particularly right now, which women they are sending to prison, because at least the statistics that we are seeing would show that this is not an appropriate group of people to be sending to prison who could be much better served in the community, but also for the men that are going to prison. We have to ask our elected prosecutors first to both examine carefully who they're sending to prison for how long, and to make sure their staff, who are also making these decisions day to day in courtrooms, are really being thoughtful about who we're sending to prison and who we're figuring out how to hold accountable and support in other ways.
And what can people do right now about this late September vote?
One thing you could do is go to the Facebook page for Partnership for Safety and Justice or our webpage and sign up to get our e-alerts. We will be creating actions around this. I think the most important thing you could do if you don't want to sign up is to either contact the elected prosecutor in your county or your legislators and let them know that you want Oregon to be a state that invests in smart public safety policy and not in new prisons.
And let's name those district attorneys and prosecutors: Rod Underhill in Multnomah County, Bob Herman in Washington County, and John Foote in Clackamas County. That's at least the major counties here in Oregon.
Yes, those are good people to be in touch with and let them know that you support the kinds of investments in community that make children and families stronger. And let's be clear that when we're talking about how incarceration impacts communities, that in Oregon, you know, just like the rest of the country, the burden of incarceration falls disproportionately on people of color. And there was a recent report by the Sentencing Project, a national organization, that found Oregon to be seventh in the country for our racial disparity in terms of who we send to prison. You know, our overall Black population, for example, is not huge. The rate at which we send Black and Brown folks to prison is outrageous. And so the impact on those communities and their families and their children is disproportionate. And if we are going to take racial justice seriously in this state, we have to address the issue of incarceration.
So, Shannon, I know Partnership for Safety and Justice will be down in Salem when the legislative session begins in February 2017. Partnership for Safety and Justice was a major, and you personally were a major player in getting the Justice Reinvestment Bill passed in 2013. Thank you for your wonderful work down in Salem. So what is Partnership for Safety and Justice plan for the 2017 legislative session and stopping this new prison in Oregon?
Well, thank you, Karen. There were a lot of people involved back in 2013 to help make justice reinvestment successful, and I hope we can pull together a similar effort in 2017. You know, what needs to happen right now with the emergency board is for that money not to be allocated to build a new prison. I think if there's money that needs to be allocated to different counties that are willing to divert women from prison until we get into the legislative session, that would be an appropriate allocation from the e-board. When we get to session, we have to look at some of those things we've been talking about. Measure 57, I think in particular, a ballot measure passed in 2009 to increase sentences for drug and property offenses. We have to look at taking that offline again. We did it before. The sky did not fall, and we can invest more resources where they need to be. There are some other things we know can work and we want to push in 2017 as well. One is short-term transition leave, which is an ability for people being released from prison to go out with a strong release plan with extra and a more intense supervision to transition more successfully into the community. We can expand the length of time that people have to do that transition.
And what is the length of time currently?
The current length of time is 90 days, and the Criminal Justice Commission has produced reports showing the impact of expanding it to 120, 150, or even 180 days, and I think we need to have a conversation about all of those.
And Shannon, we should say that the short-term transitional leave, the 90-day leave, does not apply to people convicted of one of the mandatory minimum sentencing laws here in Oregon.
That's right. It doesn't apply to any person or violent crimes. That's right. And then the other thing that we want to be looking at in 2017 is expansion of a program called the Family Sentencing Alternative. And that's a bill passed in 2015 with leadership from House Majority Leader Jennifer Williamson to divert custodial parents from prison, again, with increased supervision and support for their families. So that's basically looking at parents who might otherwise be going to prison, again, for drug and property offenses, and giving them increased supervision and support in the community and parenting support so they can both be successful, stay united with their children, and not end up in prison. We're hoping to expand that program in the 2017 session to more counties than the initial five that were in the pilot project in 2015.
So the short-term transitional leave and the family sentencing alternative, have they been successful?
Yes. Short-term trans leave in particular has been very successful, and I think the data will easily show that we can go ahead and safely expand that. The family sentencing alternative is still a developing program. There were some glitches in the way the bill was drafted that need to be worked out in 2017, but it is a program that's proven in Washington State to be immensely successful, and we just need to do a better job of overlaying what they did there to our laws here. As we look at the things we want to do to push down on not having more people in prison, we need to also be looking at what we're actually growing in our communities, how we are creating programs, strong families, strong communities, and making sure we are building the world that we want to live in, that we want our children to live in. And certainly spending $10 million to essentially fund 20 prison beds is not building the world we want to live in.
Shannon White, Deputy Director of Partnership for Safety and Justice, thank you. For KBOO News, I'm Karen James.